Good evening, everyone, and hello. You're listening to Revision Media at revisionmedia.org. Today is Wednesday, September 2, 2020. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Arcane Semantics. Today, once again, I have a special treat for the listeners. A classic archive from the vault. That's right. Tonight, we will be presenting a rebroadcast archive, originally aired live September 3, 2018. On another platform which had previously hosted the Arcane Semantics broadcast. Enjoy. Well, today I am pleased to announce a very special guest, Ole Damegaard. Ole is a researcher, he's an author, international speaker, former journalist, musician, artist, and he's been an investigator into many of the false flag attacks, which have been occurring with more and more frequency. He's been awarded the Prague Peace Prize, and he's dedicated the last 35 years to researching many of these global conspiracies. Considered a leading expert on many top political assassinations, including JFK, MLK, RFK, and Swedish PM Olof Palme. And he's actually been chosen to represent the people of Europe when giving a JFK memorial speech in Delaney Plaza, Dallas, which was November of 2016. But I could go on and on. You know, always an international Raga yoga teacher. He's been the author of 4 books, including one which has been named a masterpiece, Coup d'etat in slow motion, parts 1 and 2. Ole, thank you so much for being back here with us.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure, Richard. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, yes. It is an honor to be interviewing you. And it is a little bittersweet, actually, because the gentleman who interviewed you when you were on 2 years ago, Nick Spiro, he actually passed away this past winter. Nick Spiro died of pneumonia after being in the ICU for a few days. Nick was known for his well-researched and insightful shows. You know, he'll be greatly missed around here. And he was from Chicago, and I, as it turns out, I'm also from Chicago, so it's a little bit eerie, but, you know, the passing of the torch, so to speak. But it was a brilliant interview. I just listened to it thoroughly again this past week. You covered Operation Gladio a lot with Nick in that interview, and how a lot of what we've been seeing since then seems to be, you know, a lot of the same sort of workings. But I know you talk about how this goes back much, much farther into history. So I don't know if you'd like to discuss that a little bit in this, and also just the amount of frequency in the last few years. I think 2015 is when I first started really noticing a lot of these incidents, and I just had an instinct that most all, if not all, were really seeming manufactured. Even the frequency alone was suspicious. So please, I don't know, how would you like to begin regarding these thoughts?
Well, first of all, I would just say, like to say I'm really, really sorry to hear about Nick. I had no idea. I didn't even know he was sick. So that really is a major loss. When it comes to many of these operations, it's like when I started out in around 1980, I had absolutely no idea what it was, what I was getting myself into, and also I had no idea that so many of these events, alleged attacks and top of political assassinations, that there were actually connections between them. I thought they were all separate incidents, separate attacks by different terrorist organizations and so on. But over the years, the more I've been digging into it, I've started to find a very clear pattern, almost like templates that seems to have been used. And I believe that it, you can track these templates back to the old Romans, because for so many centuries, we've always had a small little so-called elite, or that is at least what they prefer calling them themselves, where a handful of people have tried to rule the masses. And so how can they do that? Because in a normal, balanced society, if somebody starts pushing around with you and trying to force you to do that, if you outnumber them by the hundreds or thousands, that wouldn't work. So the way they have done it, I would say forever and ever, is through psyops. It's through fear that they can control us. So what they've done is that they've created an outer enemy, many, many times, an outer enemy that is created out of thin air or their own creation, to scare the living bejesus out of us, so that we will turn towards them and ask for protection, saying, please, please protect us. And that will then give them more and more power to even get us to beg them to help us, and beg them to give us this protection. And so when you follow these things, they're like some major templates that are very important to understand. One is the problem, reaction, solution, divide and conquer, also stepping stones, and so on. And if it's okay with you, I can just outline just a few of the things that we need to become aware of to start seeing that they what we're actually facing here.
Please, please.
Okay, so when it comes to problem, reaction, solution, that is a very, very old, I believe, Roman tactic. And it's based on this, once again, this small elite, and it's an absolute psyop, because what we're seeing is that first we have a problem secretly created by the few in power. The reason for this problem, nowadays, it's most of the time it's in the form of a bomb attack, a terror attack, a mass shooting, a financial crash or something like that. It can be a virus scare, many different ways of scaring us. So that's the problem. The reason why this problem is created is to get us into a emotional reaction, where we just react without thinking. So they need to, this problem needs to be very, very frightening so that we go into absolute fear mode. And the way they do that is through, especially through women and children. If women and children or young students are hurt, then we go much more emotional than should the victims of these alleged attacks be old guys or cows or people in a hospice or whatever. So they aim at you emotionally. And what they want is this reaction from us, just saying, oh, my God, please, please help me, help me. We need protection here. And so we turn towards the people we believe are there to protect us, not understanding that it's actually them who have created the problem, saying, please, please. And they will then say, well, the only way we can protect you with this horrible problem is, and boom, in comes the solution. And the solution every single time is something we would never, ever have accepted had it not been for the problem. Problem, reaction, solution. And nowadays, the solution, it's the same over and over again. It's more and more militarized police, more and more robocops in the streets, military vehicles, almost on the border to martial law. You got CCTV cameras, body scanners, backscatters, all of these type of things, all there for your protection. That's what they want you to believe, or us to believe. But actually, they're the ones who created this mayhem. So it is a psyop, and it's very, very important to understand. Problem, reaction, solution. The second one I would very much like to explain is a so-called false flag operation. So what is a false flag operation? Well, it goes back to the old naval times, where countries like the Holland or Spain, Portugal, England, and so on was so totally powerful that they could just travel around in the world, just invade and destroy more or less any nation, which they did to a large extent. But then sometimes these operations could cause problems with trade agreements with neighboring countries and so on. So somewhere down the line, someone came up with the idea, why don't we put the enemy's flag on one of our own ships? Then we let our own ship attack ourselves, so that we, instead of being the attacker or the enforcer and the oppressor, then becomes the victim that needs to defend itself. So this whole thing turns around from them attacking, being the bully, to being the victim that is very, very applauded when defending itself. But the result is the same. The nation has been invaded, destroyed, conquered, rape and plunder, you name it. But suddenly now, because of the false flag, it is where the rest of the world applauds them and say, oh, fantastic, fantastic. So it's once again, it's a psyop. So when these false flag attacks occur, the attacked one is actually the attacker. The attacked one is actually the attacker. So it's very, very important to understand that when these operations take place, the people that then afterwards stands up and say, oh, we must unite the nation in the face of terror. We will not give up. They are not the victims. They are actually part of the attacking force. So, and there's a misunderstanding nowadays where many people think that a false flag operation means that there are no real victims. That is a total misunderstanding. It has nothing to do with that. It is a psyop where the attack one is actually the attacker. That is the whole thing. This whole thing with real victims or not real victims has become a very strange question, because I would think that it's wonderful if there's no real victims, but it's the other way around. If anyone starts suggesting that there might not be real victims, but these people allegedly killed are so-called crisis actors or made up by phantom identities, they will be crucified, which I don't really understand the logic behind that. But when you look at many of these operations nowadays, there used to be real victims. Then after, I think the Boston bombing was the first one where the so-called crisis actor came in on stage. And from then on, crisis actors have become more and more reoccurring on these sites. A crisis actor is an absolute awful actor, because all the good actors are already taken and would be recognized in movies or commercials. So they can't use them. So the people behind these operations need to use whatever is left over. And these people are often not very good at it. So these crisis actors are there paid to lie around looking like victims with ketchup all over them. Or they would be eyewitnesses. They will sometimes be SWAT teams, ambulance drivers, police, people in uniform in the background, or just background extras. So, and this has become a whole industry with this crisis acting. Nowadays, this whole anti-terror or alleged terror thing has become a major, major business thing, and big companies. Some of them called Crisis Solutions. That's crisis-solutions.com. A very, very, very suspicious company, if you ask me, when it comes to who's behind these alleged terror attacks. There's another company called Crisis Cast that also appear many times in the background. We have a massive security company called G4S that is also very often there. We have ICTS, that is the company, Israeli-owned, that controls the CCTV cameras in more or less all of these different areas where these alleged attacks occur. And these cameras have this incredible tendency of not working when they're actually needed. So right before something happens, boom, all cameras turn off, the thing takes place, and boom, all cameras go on again. Again, this is standard procedure. You also got the crisisactors.org. And nowadays you can even rent a crowd. You got the Crowd on Demand. That's an American company. Rent a Crowd is another one where you can rent a whole crowd that will be transported on location for whatever need you have, at whatever staged event, if you want a demonstration or a rally or whatever. If you're a failed rock musician, you can just get fans like that. You just pay for it. Boom, there they are. And they even got Rent a Mourner. So these are people that can, when they're list funerals, if they meet people in the background crying, that's the way to go. Just rent a mourner. So the whole thing is becoming very much like a film set, a staged event, where the whole idea is to pump out fear. That's the thing. The product for all of these operations is fear. That is the main target.
I caught some of the images you had presented last year at the Open Mind Conference of some of these websites and some of their videos. Yes, it is amazing how much they advertise these services now, and just how many of these incidents really don't have the death tolls that we're told. Would you say some of these incidents that we're seeing, though, still do have deaths? Because it can be or it can not be. It's a psychological operation engineered, is, I suppose, another way you could describe a false flag. You know, there may be deaths and there may not. I mean, what about the one in Florida at the nightclub? Like that one, would you say, were there any deaths at it?
Richard, this is the most tricky one to answer. The Pulse shooting, I'm sure that is the one you're referring to, is yes. A major psyop. There might have been some victims, I don't know, but the whole operation itself was an absolute false flag with absolute a major portion of crisis actors involved. The whole club was not active at the time. It had the permit had run out the year before. It didn't even have room for the people that are said to have been in there. When you listen to the testimonials of eyewitnesses inside, for instance, there was this a young woman who described that she was lying in the bathroom where there was a handicapped toilet. She was lying there, and she saw the shooter come in, and she got her best friend shot next to her. And then just when the shooter was about to kill her, the SWAT team broke through the wall and made big holes in the wall and then shot Omar Marti. The only thing is that when you start really looking into this, you will see that in the ladies' bathroom where she says she was, and you compare that to where the holes in the wall were made by the SWAT team and the attacking force from the outside, it's not in the same location. So there's absolutely no way that she could have seen what she said to have seen. And also there's no way they could have shot the shooter the way she explained. And she's just one of so many where it just does not match up at all. So also you have all of these victims where, I don't know about you, but if I would get shot by an AR-15 or something similar like that, I would be in hospital for quite a while. I can guarantee you that. But we have these people who are like shot 5-6 times, and then they're out the next day, smiling, laughing, taking part of press conferences and stuff. So hallelujah. I mean, miracles are apparently possible. But it's like in your face, because you have like there's one guy who was shot 6 times, and he says in the press conference and stuff that he held up his hand to sort of like, please don't shoot me, don't shoot me. And then the shooter shot him, hit his hand, his right hand, and that saved his life. But at the press conference, he doesn't even have a Band-Aid or anything on his hand, either of them. This is just one. There's so many of them, last week, this Jacksonville thing, this guy got shot twice in the back, he said. And the reporter said he was in hospital multiple hours. Well, multiple hours is, if I get a bad tooth, I'm spending multiple hours waiting for the dentist and get it pulled out. That is not the normal time time span you spend in hospital if you've been shot twice in the lower back. I mean, you need to be operated. They need to get these projectiles out of you and so on. And there's no way that you can walk down the street just a few hours later doing interviews. And this is just a few examples of hundreds, I tell you, hundreds of very bizarre stories like this. So
yes,
for some reason, oh, sorry.
Oh, no, not the amount of investigation you've done with official procedures, speaking with, you know, ambulance drivers, different medical personnel, and even police officers. You've seen how much is not going according to protocol as well, correct?
This is the thing. Do you know, like, I am so not interested in theories. The only thing I'm looking for is facts and the truth. Whatever the truth is, I'm not here to prove anything. I mean, no one would be happier than I if there weren't all of these things that I needed to look into. So the question is, what happened? Who did it? Who benefited? And what are they up to now? And so when you look into these things, you very early find that part of the template being used is that there is a patsy, someone that is going down as the alleged shooter or attacker or whatever it is they're trying to blame it on this. And this individual is most of the time a lone crazy guy, lone wolf, mentally disturbed, on drugs, or a fanatic. The reason why they, behind these operations, they, I say in quotes, want them to be alone is then by law, it's not a conspiracy. And should this person die or be suicided on location, then case closed, thank you and goodbye. The reason why they want him to be crazy is because then there's no need for a motive. He was crazy. He went up and did what he did and boom, he's dead. Case closed. Thank you, folks. Go back to sleep. Is that or they want him a fanatic because then they can just point to the Quran. And nowadays, the words Islam, Muslim, Quran have been weaponized. So as soon as the word is heard, if you say Islam, most people's brain will think terrorism. Or if you say he's a Muslim, oh my God, he's a terrorist. Your mind will think that. The exact, and that is what is called weaponizing words. The same way that the word conspiracy theories or conspiracy theorists were created by the CIA just a few years after the JFK assassination. Very deliberate to be used against people like you and me or anyone who would start asking critical questions saying, what you're telling me does not match up at all. I demand to hear the truth. I demand for you to tell me the truth. This is where these words were being created to be used. Because as soon as you say conspiracy theory, there is a doubt. And then you can ridicule this individual or you can make fun or whatever, get rid of them. Or you... conspiracy theorist, once again, there's this doubt that it's just taken out of thin air and he's a tinfoil hat, just making things up. I'm so not interested in theories at all. I'm interested in forensic facts. And just like you said, over the years, I've gathered a small little team of amazing people around me that are former forensic detectives, police officers, ambulance drivers, firefighters, pathologist and so on. So every time something like this happened, I'm not guessing. I'm calling these people saying, listen, please look at this ambulance. The way these ambulances are parked across the street, for me, it looks like a block, you know, like a road blockage. Is that, or is this a normal way of parking ambulances? And when most of the time, my friends, they just say, if this would have was a real event, this and this and this and this is what would have occurred, then we look at the event itself. The exact opposite is what most of the time is what's happened. And there was a man that I really admired. His name was Fletcher Prouty. He was in the Pentagon and in Black Ops for many years. He's the guy who is portrayed as Mr. X in the JFK movie by Oliver Stone. What he said is that One of the sure signs of a false flag or a black op is that all the normal way things occur, you know, when it comes to how the police acts, how things are cordoned off, how witnesses are being interrogated, all of that goes into like slow motion mode and just stops. And the exact opposite happens instead of what normally happens. If any, like for instance, you or I would do something stupid, throw a rock in a shop window or something like that, the police would be there, whoom, right away. But if the PM of a country is shot or something like that, it can be delayed for hours until the real attacking team has left the area, has been let out, the patsy has been put in place, all the forensic evidence is pointed towards the patsy, the crime scene is cleared out, and then, boom, the whole thing is presented. So you will see how things are being played out. That will give you an indication of what's actually going on.
And you mentioned this weaponizing of words. Also, I know in the past you've spoken a lot about slogans, like these slogans in the aftermath that are engineered for how we're supposed to react.
It's a psyop, and included in the psyop are these type of things, slogans, also the words you will see nowadays in mainstream media, online media and so on, where the words that they claim, the trigger words, are even put in quote signs. So, woman beheaded by a Muslim terrorist. Then the word beheaded would be in quotation signs. Or four teenagers disemboweled. The words will be in quotation marks. Why they do that, I'm not totally sure. I think maybe the day when all of this turns around, that they want to be able to cover their butt and say, well, we didn't know for sure, so we put it like that. But you can see it over and over and over again. And with these slogans, for instance, you got the Je suis Charlie after the alleged Charlie Hebdo attack. Je suis Charlie, that was a thing. That was a thing that was pumped out all over the world right after this thing happened. If you don't remember, there were two brothers, Palestinian brothers, they say, who got very upset because there was this French magazine that had been making drawings of Muhammad looking like a dog or something like that. And that was, they didn't mind that the West and Israel was bombing and killing thousands of people in Gaza and so on. That didn't bother them. But making cartoons of Muhammad, that was the thing. And it's, by the way, this theme has been used, I think, in five or six different operations, the exact same theme, but in different countries. So it said that these two brothers, they got very upset. They got home, they got the black balaclavas, the black clothes. Of course, they didn't forget their ID and their passport, as you do when you're a suicide terrorist. So you can drop that in the car on the street and make sure that the police will find you. And so they went and they killed the people at this magazine called Charlie Hebdo. So right after that, there was this massive slogan being pumped out, Je suis Charlie. Je suis Charlie. I am Charlie. And if you look at that, is there any kind of logic to that? I am Charlie. So that is sort of like if you have a mass shooting in Chicago, would people say, I am downtown Chicago? It doesn't match up. What you're looking at, it's a slogan. It's really catchy. Je suis Charlie. And boom, right away on Facebook, all of these social media, you had pre-made templates that you could put over your photo, like boom, Je suis Charlie. Actually, I've been told by people, French people living in France, that this is actually an expression and it means I'm an idiot. That is what it stands for. But also you see in the streets right after, there were thousands and thousands of people walking around with these paper printed where it says Je suis Charlie. It was printed white on black, not black on white. And it said that people had printed it themselves. I beg to differ. If you know the cost of an ink cartridge for your printer, wouldn't you print black on white, and that so that the text is black on white paper, instead of printing the whole paper black and with white and identical fonts on all of these different banners and stuff that was over there. This is part of the operation. You will see it right after these things happen. These things are being handed out in the thousands. It can be candles, it can be signs, it can be these type of things, pre-printed and prepared. And so how could you give them out to like thousands of people in Paris so fast? Well, the thing is, there were 30,000 soldiers in Paris the day before. Now, all of these 30,000 soldiers were on leave the day it happened. So what does 30,000 soldiers look like in civilian clothes? Very much like a mass of people filling up the streets. And then when there are thousands of people in the street, other people come there and just like, what's going on? I'll join. And so that's how you create it. So it's part of the psyop.
And you mentioned the names of people that they'll hold responsible. Well, they'll be catchy if they may want to recycle it for another incident. They won't be catchy as likely if it's a one-time thing. That's a lot of little clues that they like to leave. Also, you mentioned, you talk a lot about shoes. You've mentioned bicycles, and then the karma. I found very interesting your take on there and your perceptions of that.
I know these things sounds absolutely bizarre to start with. And so I'll start with the names. The names, just like you say, if the people behind these operations, as part of a psyop, if they want these things to be like a one-off scare, boom, the name of the Muslim terrorist, because nowadays it used to be East German and Russian, that was the boogeyman. Now after the Cold War, in on stage came the Muslim terrorist. So you have these names that are just on, you cannot even pronounce them. I mean, the spelling of these names are incredible, and often three names in a row. So it's like Abdullah Schnippolodra Snachnara or something like that. That sounds really scary. If you add also a photo of a guy with a big beard, black beard, dark eyebrows and black eyes, looks scary. And they come from countries that you have never heard of. I mean, most people don't, like Kazakhstan or Uzbekistan or something like that. You don't even know is it a real country? No, but I'm sure they're fanatic over there. So that is if it's a one-time blow. But if you want sort of something that you can repeat so that because I wouldn't be able to repeat that name when I tell my neighbor, you know, like, do you know that? Just shot another guy, you know, how would he be able to tell that story and freak someone else out? He wouldn't. So that is why in on stage comes these catchy names like Jihadi Johnny, Jihadi Jane. You have we got the different viruses, the Ebola virus, the Zika virus. I mean, these ones, very, very catchy names. And by the way, the patents have been owned by the CDC in Atlanta, Georgia. That CDC is the Center for Disease Control, where all of these scares are started from, where this whole thing, fear propaganda, is being pumped out. There's a new camel virus out there, and it will eat your brain on babies or whatever. Whatever they can to freak you out, it will come from there when it's viruses. And like for the Zika virus, the patent was there in 1947. It's still there. You can buy it online even if you want. And the CDC, you also have to understand, was created at this very same time as NASA and when OSS was created also after the Second World War, and when Operation Paperclip was transporting all of these Nazi scientists and different experts in many different areas were exported and then imported into the US and other countries. And there they started from scratch building up companies like exactly OSS that was then, or the OSS was already there, then turned into CIA. NASA was there with von Braun. and so on, and CDC, the Center for Disease Control. So these three forces were covering a whole lot of terrain together. So the names. Then we had, what was the next thing? Yes, the bicycles and the shoes. Well, let's start with the coroner. I had no idea why there were so many strange details in these operations until one day in 2014, I think it was, I was contacted by somebody who told me that it was an insider, anonymous insider, I don't know who it was, but he said, you're doing really good, but you're missing out on the clues and on the karma. And I was like, I didn't understand what he was saying. And so he said, no, you have to understand the reason why certain things are done is because the way the people behind these operations, their view on the law of karma. And I said, please tell me more because I'm intrigued here. And so he said, well, there are actually clues left in the forensic evidence behind every operation. And these clues are pointing to upcoming events. The reason why these clues are left there is because, once again, we go back to the law of karma. They believe that if they show us what they're up to, even in subtle ways, and we do not react, then the bad karma is on our shoulders, not theirs. And they even believe that they gain good karma if they are if they are able to pull it off right in front of our face, right in front of us. Even though they told us about it, we should know about it, and they pull it off, they gain good karma. That is their sick way of interpreting the law. I have no idea if this is how it works, but that is what this insider told me. So another insider contacted me and said, one of the things that I had pointed out in many, many interviews was the amazing amount of shoes that were lying around. I over the years, I had this super, I call it my vault, that you can access through my website. It's almost 3 terabyte of forensic evidence for so many different cases, all in perfect systematic order, folders, subfolders, and everything, alphabetic, you name it, is there. And over the years, one of the things that I kept bumping into were these trainers, especially Nike trainers that were just there all the time. And I was like, how is that possible? If somebody starts shooting at you, why do you sit down, take off your shoes, and then run? Or if somebody's trying to hit you with a truck or something like that, why do you take off your shoes and then run? It doesn't make any sense. Or if you're hit by a car, would the shoe fall off? And I've spoken to ambulance drivers, and they say it is possible, but very unusual, that a shoe actually falls off. And very rarely are they trainers, because trainers are with, the laces, tied laces. So they stick to the foot better. Sometimes if there is a car and a train accident, the shoe can come off, but often with a foot in it or some gross thing like that. But there is no natural explanation for all of these shoes. So this insider, he told me that the reason for these shoes are actually Freemasonic. It's part of the ritual that is being played out in front of our eyes, because that's the way they see many of these things. And he said that just like in the Freemasons' own rituals, one shoe off, a victim or someone involved in this whole thing, one shoe off means that this person is doing it voluntarily. Two shoes off means homage to the sacred space. And I tell you, so many of the alleged victims or people in the background are without shoes. Or then you will see everyone who's there have shoes on, but still there are shoes lying around in the street. How come? How is that possible? And it's always inside the crime scene. So they're part of the whole thing. It's part inside the cordon off area, meaning that these are not just shoes that a bystander has taken off and thrown or whatever. They're part of the crime scene. So I did a show a while ago with my friend CIA whistleblower Cody Snodgrass, who I helped to step forward as a whistleblower almost a year ago. And he's been involved for many, many years in multiple black ops and so on, and also in MK Ultra. And one day when we were doing a show, he said that he thinks that the shoes have an additional part in these operation, because he said that when you break down an individual to become an asset in an MKUltra asset that can be controlled and do whatever you want him to do or her, the way they do that is to destroy the personality, to destroy the human being, so that the personality, when the pain is just too much through torture or sexual abuse or rape or you name it, the personality splits into multiple personality just to avoid the pain. And once that goal is accomplished, then they use triggers to be able to swap, to switch between the different personalities, so that you can actually have one personality of a person as an assassin, a controlled assassin, that and then the other one is the real person. And the real person has no idea that he's actually an assassin, part-time or whatever. So very, very scary. But Cody said that the way they do this is that when they break them down with rape and torture, they hold up different symbols in front of the face. They force them to look at them while experience these very intense pains and so on, suffering. So in the end, the traumatic experience is connected to the symbol, meaning that in the end, they don't even have to torture you anymore. It's enough just to show you the image or the symbol that could be whatever, often a neutral symbol that no, it would mean absolutely nothing to anyone else. But once they put this symbol up in front of you, boom, they activate this other part of your being. So Cody said he believes that since these shoes have been there in hundreds and hundreds of operations, our subconscious have started to connect them with these traumatic experiences, because we see the mayhem, the blood, the destruction, dead bodies in the background, and then these shoes are there. So we don't notice them, but our subconscious does. And when this is repeated over the years, boom, you got a perfect global mind control trigger that is right there in hidden in plain sight. Nobody notices it, but it affects more or less all of us. The shoe. So when I started hearing, or when he said that, it made absolute perfect sense. Because also when you look over over the decades, I believe the first time when the shoe was really used for this kind of traumatic mind control trigger was after the Holocaust. That was the first time we saw these mountains of shoes that was told, where we were told that all of these people were mass murdered in alleged gas chambers and so on. And the thing we kept seeing was the shoe, the shoe, the shoe. And actually the Hebrew word for Holocaust is shua. But these shoes have then been used in the Vietnam War, the Korean War, the Six-Day War, the Balkan War, and in so many different areas as well. So I've started doing shows where I'm pointing out, I think it's up to 50 different topics, fear topics, including viruses, global warming, conspiracy theories, gang rape, brutal home violence, killings, murders, drive-by shooting, where these shoes have become so dominant that many times nowadays they only show the shoe. So you can have like the headlines, drive-by shooting outside the nightclub in Baltimore. And there's nothing from the crime scene. There's nothing. There's just a shoe. Or teenagers shot outside the bar in Manhattan. Just a trainer on the street. When the Las Vegas shooting happened, you had on the New York Times front page, there was a shoe and some blood. That was it. And the symbol for the Las Vegas mass shooting was a boot with the American flag on it, the shoe of hope or the boot of hope. And these shoes have just been repeated and repeated and repeated. And it's not only in the US. These operations are coordinated internationally. I call it the global tour of terror. So what is where these operations take place is in NATO countries, the US, Canada, Australia. It's mostly these nations. And then it just goes round and round and round and round in a circle, just pumping it in, pushing this in, making us believe that we live in this horrific world filled with terrorists and terror, mass shootings, killings, murder, rape, plunder, when actually, when you look out the window, I think most of us are looking out and it looks pretty wonderful, calm, beautiful. But as soon as we look at this black box in front of us, the reality we've been pumped with is totally different.
Absolutely.
Because once I started pointing out these shoes, this just spread like a wildfire and people started making jokes about these shoes. And I mean, I'm getting hundreds of emails from all over the world about people pointing out shoes, sending me photos of the shoes. So it's starting to get like the opposite effect. Instead of people getting terrified, they're laughing at it, saying like, oh, come on, you must be joking. Make it better than this. It's ridiculous. So now it seems like they're making like a transition, I believe, from the shoe to another neutral object that can be lying there in the background and do the same thing. But they need a period of like a transition period where both are there so that we get triggered by the shoe, but then the new object is there as well. And these, what I think has been there since the Nice attack and onwards, are bicycles in the background. Bicycles. So that, I think, is the one. Now they're fading out the shoe, and now you will see more and more bicycles in the background or as part of the operation. Like, for instance, recently, George Bush Sr.'s heart surgeon is said to have been killed in a drive-by shooting. So how did that happen? Well, he was on a bicycle, and the shooter as well was on a bicycle. Is that plausible? I don't know, but it's just, if you see now, notice shoes and bicycles, and you will start seeing them being repeatedly again and again and again, the same.
Another clue is I had heard you pointing out and showed illustrations of some examples of recycled crisis actors. They'll use a lot of the same people in different roles. I think you showed some footage even of people changing outfits with some vehicle blocking the way. There have been vehicles in very strange positions, just a lot of, very off things. Like, I mean, the way the one truck was parked in the one example on the opposite side of the road, completely diagonal, blocking everything. But the recycling of a lot of these people. And then you mentioned the kind of places that had been chosen, the landmarks, transportation centers, stadiums, vehicle involvement, and different agendas, of course. I mean, there's a gun agenda, it seems, with mass shootings in the U.S. and more terrorist fear focus in Europe. Isn't that correct?
They use whatever works, you know, and so in mass shootings, more or less only occurs in the U.S., at least with the amount of victims, it's the U.S., because it is in the U.S. where the population is armed. So we're back to the problem, reaction, solution. How are they going to do? How are they going to persuade people to give up their guns? They need to create a problem to get the reaction, oh my God, something needs to be done, and boom, in comes the solution. Give up your guns. How are they going to do that? Well, they've been trying now for a long, long time with these mass shootings where they go emotional. So they go in high schools, high schools is the thing, because there's where the kids are, our children, our teenagers and so on. Many times beautiful young girls and boys, but mostly girls, once again, emotional. If they're teachers, they're women. Once again, it's to get the emotional impact so that we would say, oh my God, something needs to be done. So problem, mass shooting, reaction, oh my God, solution. What is the solution? I would say if you got a whole bunch of crazy young kids that have weapons, maybe a thing would be to look into the healthcare or take care of these children, or look into what is it that makes them so miserable that they do horrible things like this. But that is not what we're being told. We're being told it's the weapon. It's the weapon that is the problem. and especially automatic weapons. They started with automatic weapons, then they went down to semi-automatic. Then they would go down to single shot, so repeaters or whatever it's called. Then they would go down to knives. Then they would go to forks. In the end, we would only be left with a spoon. I tell you, that is this is what they're doing in Europe here, because since we don't have guns so much, they're aiming to try and get whatever away from us. So there's all these alleged stabbings, especially now in the UK. And it's just ridiculous. I mean, when I look into these, my normal reaction after a while is just like, it's just so poorly pulled off. And you see the crime scene. What's in the crime scene? Well, you got bicycles in the background and you got shoes in the middle. So many times we're being told an attack happened, or a stabbing, or a shooting happened there and there. Okay, possible. Let me look at it. And the only thing we see are police cars, ambulances with flashing lights, a cordon off area. And then they're like clothes, shoes, first aid bags on the street. That's it. No blood, no people, no witnesses, no nothing. And the witnesses that are being interviewed say more or less the same thing. Well, I was standing here and then I saw people coming running. So I started running and then my friends started running with me. That's how you start a stampede type of thing. That's how you. So very few people actually see what's happened. And also, you need to be very close to see if something is a staged, like on a film set type of event with the smoke bombs and sound bombs and crisis actors, makeup. It's very hard nowadays to see what is real and not real, even when you're on location almost. So what is real and what is not? And then also look at these different clues that are left there pointing towards the next one. This, since 2014, when I was first told about these clues, up until then, I had absolutely no idea. I didn't think how clumsy. I mean, why would they do something as stupid as that? This is a covert operation. If it's a false flag, why on earth wouldn't they try to keep it secret? And in came the karma thing explaining it. So from then on, I totally focused myself in trying to find these hidden clues. And very often the clues are in one photo. There can be like hundreds of photos from a crime scene that is spread in the international media and so on. And it can be in, most of the time, it's in one photo where there's a lot of symbolism and details packed in and pointing towards the next one. Sometimes more than one operation nowadays, so they're pointing in different direction, I think, to confuse individuals like myself in what is going on. And it can also be like a whole step of things, like steps of clues, like in a Dan Brown novel type of thing, where you're being led to one place to find the next clue, to go to next place to find next clue and next place. And there you find the clue to the real event. So very confusing. At the same time, I tell you, they're doing it, because I've been able to predict, I think, 15 now on public radio, international radio, up to 2 months before they actually happen. And I've been able to stop two personally that I know of these events, just by knowing and understanding the language, the communication they have, and the clues, what they actually mean and where they're pointing.
Perhaps the listeners are curious. Those two events that you believe you may have thwarted, you know, stopped, or well, had them wound up getting relocated. Could you mention which two those were?
One of them were outside the Bilderberg meeting in 2014 in Copenhagen. And Richard, I would be very happy. Maybe we could do a separate show about that, because it's quite a long story, but I think it's a really interesting thing. And also it could help people start seeing these details for themselves. It involves people from the CIA and Marines and so on that helped me confirm my suspicion and so on. And then that was the thing that I believe stopped this thing. And later also I've had it confirmed from someone that he believes that he was the guy that they were planning to use as the patsy, and Danish army guy. So maybe we could do a show like that, and I'll just tell you the whole story because it's a long story, but it will give you an understanding of what to look out for. And so maybe your listeners also can start becoming more and more active in stopping these events, because that's the whole point. You know, my intention is peace and balance, harmony, equality for everyone, and stop messing around with us. Stop. It's like being up against the, you know, like the mob with enforcers that come and try to freak us out so that we will just bend over and obey. So it's the same type of thing that is going on, but now on a global scale. But I can show you just a few. Let me give you a few examples. For instance, like, do you remember the Bataclan massacre in Paris? There was one photo inside this music theater where they said that all of these people got shot. There's only one photo from inside, and that photo is inside the theater, and there's like 25 bodies lying on the floor. There's nothing, no forensic detectives there, no nothing where they sort of marked the evidence, which is normal. Like this, there's no sign of medical people there or people attending to the victims, anyone surviving, nothing, just bodies on the floor. We zoom in. I try to find the technical data from the photo. It's a screenshot from a computer so that there's nothing in it. You can't find it. Normally, you can see what kind of type of camera, when it was taken. And so here, they were very aware of that, and somebody took a photo of it, of a computer screen, and then that is the one we've been shown. So when you start looking into this folder, it becomes very bizarre, because down in the left the corner, there's a golden death mask, and up in the sitting area, there's red seats, velvet sheet seats. You will see that there's five or six figures, like in black robes, like eyes wide shut, these type of things, very satanic looking individuals, very hard to see, but once you start spotting them and you enlarge and enlarge, you will see, yep, that is exactly it. Then you look at the bodies, you will see that some of these bodies, I totally doubt that they're real bodies. They're more possibly they're what is called dapper cadavers, which is used in film scenes, you know, when they need the war scene, dead bodies or people thrown off a high building or whatever, they use these dapper cadavers, they're called. Because you can see, and I've also spoken to medical experts, where the way they bend their legs, the hips, the way that the knees are bended and so on, it's totally unnatural. You can't do that. Maybe if you were hit by a truck, but these people were officially shot. Then you can see also that somebody has been very careful to roll out what looks like cardboard or, I don't know, some kind of paper to cover the floor so that there won't be damages, because they poured blood around the whole thing. And you will also see it's very strange, because the blood is running in different directions. This floor is going downwards towards the stage, as far as I can see on other photos from this arena. But here they're running in different directions, meaning that somebody has poured it. It has not run naturally. But the thing that really caught my interest was that around these bodies, it looks like somebody has taken like a three or six, let me see here, 3-4 feet wide brush, it looks like, and painted like what appears to be a heart around these bodies, all of them. And this was later explained with that, well, somebody had been dragging a body around trying to save them. But I tell you, in that case, you need somebody evenly bleeding, like for the whole side of the body, evenly bleeding, and then pulling them sideways around the whole thing, painting more or less perfect heart. So is that possible? I don't know. Anyway, the... I thought that was sort of a heart, that they painted it as the, since Paris is the city of romance, and but it's also the heart of ISIS. ISIS, Paris, it comes from ISIS, the word ISIS. But anyway, when I was really looking into this, then the next operation happened, and that was the attack at the Brussels airport at the Brussels airport. A totally fake event, I tell you, a staged event there. I've got in touch with. I've been on location to more or less all of these different places where these alleged attacks have happened here in Europe and in many in the States as well. And anyway, so when going through that, suddenly I saw that the logo for the Brussels airport was a blood red, not a heart, but it's actually a combination of a bird and a heart. And that is and then it says underneath, the heart of Europe, Brussels, the heart of Europe. And that heart-shaped thing is more or less identical to the one painted on the floor in the Bataclan thing, because it wasn't a heart, it was that symbol. And then at the Brussels airport, it said that there were multiple bombs that went off there. I went there, and there was especially one photo that caught my interest. It was in the back of the airport where none of the bombs went off, according to the official story. It wasn't even near, but still there were photos of debris lying around, furniture lying around, stuff hanging from the ceiling and so on. Didn't make any sense. And then in the background on the wall, on a white wall, there was a painting of the Eiffel Tower horizontal, I mean, lying down. Have you ever seen a wall painting of the Eiffel Tower horizontal? I mean, very, very strange. So this was are the type of clues I'm looking for. So I went straight out and said, please, please be aware the next one could be the Eiffel Tower. And then on July 14th, the Bastille Day, the National Day of France, there was this Nice attack, the truck attack in Nice, or alleged attack in Nice. But what most people are not aware of is that there was also an attack against the Eiffel Tower, where there was a truck that reversed in under the Eiffel Tower, where you're not allowed to have any vehicles there at all. But this truck reversed in under. They say that there were all these fireworks in it, and it caught on fire. So you got images of the Eiffel Tower lit up, totally covered in smoke and what appears to be flames. So, and also I want to point out that after I went out with this image, pumping it out, saying, please, please be aware, there was a so-called ISIS video that came out a week later with more or less the identical image of the Eiffel Tower being blown up and lying down horizontal, more or less identical to the wall painting. And it just goes on and on and on. There's so many of these where they're pointing in directions. You go there, you find the next one. You go there, you find the next one. You go there, you find the next one. And this is what I think a blessing in disguise, because this is a possibility for us to become aware of these things. And then instead of always being one step behind, let's get one step ahead and stop these things. Because if we can become aware of where the next attack is going to happen, that will also give us the opportunity to stop it, to expose it. Because these forces they're like cockroaches. They can only function in the dark when they're not seen and so on. So if we aim the light at them, we neutralize them. Totally nonviolent, but that is the way to stop them. Just let the truth do the work and expose them.
Yeah, there's but just so many different agendas, it seems, as well. I've heard you discuss some of the different focuses in, like I said, Europe and the U.S., but it can overlap and vary a lot, sometimes serve multiple purposes. You mentioned whatever works as well. I don't know if you wanted to discuss a bit about the different choices, landmarks, transportation centers, stadiums, vehicle involvement. And then I would also like to get your take on discussing Sandy Hook, because that was a major incident. And then the resurfacing now, it seems Wolfgang Halbig has won some of his court cases, but it seems to be getting used a lot now for this censorship push on the internet.
Yeah. So you have a tendency to put multiple questions into one. So I will take them one by one. The targets that they're aiming at is they want to go emotional. It is not that they are aiming at destroying things. That is not of their interest. They want to go emotional. They want to pump you up with fear so that we will accept their agenda. Their agenda is the New World Order That is what I believe is what we're seeing being played out, which is a world agenda. It's about global control. And the idea is a one world fascist state, a one world army there to control us, not to defend us, a one world digital currency, a one world religion, a one world horror place, absolute horror place where two-thirds of us are no longer here because they want to get rid of us as well through chemtrails and vaccinations and you name it. So horrible, horrible, horrible if we let them get away with it. That's the agenda. The thing is that they are using what I believe is a coordinated attack on the world, especially on the so-called modern world or the the Western world. And here we have in the US mostly mass shootings so that they can confiscate the weapons. They don't have that problem in Europe. In Europe, it's a different situation because in Europe, people are so well fed. They're peaceful. They live, small nations, good neighbors, and everything is working pretty fine. So how do you stir it up there? How can you get people to accept a very brutal control? You had to do something horrible. And this is where terrorism comes in. And this is where Gladio comes in. And this is where the strategy of tension comes in. And let me just go through quickly what Gladio is, because that is very important to understand. Gladio was created after the Second World War in cooperation between the winning nations and the US. The CIA was deeply involved in it as well. And so they made, when NATO was created, this NATO alliance that was there to start with as a defending alliance, now it has become an absolute brutal attack tool. But in the beginning, what they were afraid of was a possible invasion from the East, from Russia and so on. So what they did was they made it mandatory, totally top secret, but mandatory, that every single NATO nation, as part of being a member of NATO, should create their own Gladio army, like a ghost army. And these armies should consist of hundreds and hundreds of small cells of like 8 to 10 people in each, with weapons, fuel, food depots, maps, radio communication system, everything like that, dug down. These cells should not know about each other. It would be totally compartmentalized. They could only stay in contact with radio and so on. The whole idea was that this would be a network, a resistance network that could not be infiltrated easily and could also, if the country would be invaded, then the idea was that the government, the royalties, the creme de la creme, top of the of society could escape to London. And then in London, they could activate the resistance just with one phone call, more or less, boom, activate. And the whole thing would be in place. All of these hundreds and hundreds, I mean, even thousands of soldiers armed, well-fed with fuel, radio equipment, everything in position, strategically placed over the whole area. I mean, it's a fantastic idea, I think, a super idea when you look at it from a defense point of view. But then the years started going and the Russian threat diminished more and more. So after some years, here the CIA and these forces were like, we have this ghost army that no one knows about, with very hardened military, well-disciplined men that are willing to do whatever. You give them the order, they will do it. So why don't we use them for something? And in came the idea, the strategy of tension, how to inflict fear into modern society so that we would accept more and more control, more and more militarized control, more and more the governmental strategy of just even paying them to make us their slaves. So how to do that? And in on stage once again came terror. The terrorist was born. The terrorist, I think, is an Israeli creation through the Mossad, where the whole idea is war by deception, how to make an enemy, an outer enemy, a terrorist group, a something like that would scare you And the way they would do that is random violence. It's very important that it should be random violence, so that it could hit anyone at any time, anywhere. So that is why we have had all of these totally meaningless attacks at train stations, supermarkets, you name it, in Europe, where people have just been shot right, left, and center by so-called terrorists for no apparent reason, no gain for anyone. That is Operation Gladio. In around 1990, there was a major scandal in Italy. That is also where the name Gladio comes from. That is the main name for this operation. And it turned out that there were more than 10,000 people in Italy alone involved in this, going all the way up to the top of the top of the government. And then these scandals started spreading in other countries here in Europe. And it turned out that, well, more or less all countries had this thing. And then they said, oh, we're so sorry. We're never going to do anything like this again. We promise, we promise. Well, they promised, but very sorry. They just continued. So now we're still facing it. So many, many, many of these attacks or alleged attacks here in Europe, it's Gladio. They're just continuing. They call themselves Gladio B, Gladio C, just a change of name, upgrade, whatever. It's still them carrying it out. And then we go to the next of your question, with the why they use crisis actors, why they recycle it. The reason for that is to keep the parameters small. They need to control all parameters. And I believe after especially the Boston bombing, that is where crisis actors really started gaining momentum in these operations. Because up until then, after 9/11 and so on, there were lots of real victims, at least that is what I believe. But every time you kill someone, you have a problem, especially with their mothers, because women that lose a child becomes fearless. They are a nightmare to have breathing down your neck. And so I believe after some of these major operations where there were was said to have been thousands of victims and so on, you would also have thousands of women that would not back down, that were totally fearless and would just keep chasing you until they found out the truth. So they tried to kill some of these women, didn't really help. But you will also see the same phenomena in other South American countries and so on. They would, year after year, they would just continue. So that is where I think the birth of the crisis actors came, because what they have created, in my opinion, is what I call the global tour of terror. It's a small mobile unit of consisting of, I think, maybe around 130 people. It consists of directors, crisis actors, marketing agents. Military experts, you got experts with explosives, smoke bombs, radio, you got photographers, mostly most of the time from Associated Press or Reuters, both of them Rothschild owned. You got lighting, you got makeup facilities, you got costumes, you got controllers, you got bodyguards, and that's about it. And I believe that these people are being transported just like a rock group on tour from country to country, flown in at night to Air Force bases, American Air Force bases, or NATO Air Force bases. These people are then transported with buses on location to wherever this thing is going to take place. And as a preparation there, they have what they call a drill. This will be a security drill for our protection. And the good news is here that that would also be announced on local media or in the newspapers saying tomorrow, Friday, blah, 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 we're going to have a mass shooting exercise for your protection in this area. So please bugger off, leave us alone. And so the intention is so that they can shut off a certain area, close off streets, get rid of normal people, get rid of people in the houses around the area so that they will have no one that can see what is going on. Very often these areas are very small. When you go on location, which I've been on many of them, you will get surprised when you see how small these areas are. They look really big on YouTube or TV, but when you get there, it's like 100 yards, you know, very, very short often. And so the drill is there to rehearse. It is there to get everything in position, vehicles in position, camera in position, smoke bombs, explosions, crisis actors, directors, lighting, all of these things. So the drill is there so that they can rehearse multiple times. It's also there to make sure that they got the footage needed, because that's the whole idea with the operation, to be able to pump as much of this fear porn out there. So they have to make sure that they got like HD quality photos of the face of terror, you know, some woman with blood everywhere or carrying around a child in the rubble or something like that. These photos are taken during the drill. I bet you this is really what I believe, that these photos there, so they make sure during the drill that they got the photos needed. Then also a lot of video footage while they do the drill is taken. And this footage can then be used in combination with live footage when this whole thing goes on the air, maybe the next day or something like that, because the drill is often very close in on when it actually happens. And so you will see on the live footage, one of the things that I often look at is like the shadows or clouds in the background. And you will see that sometimes it's a mix of the footage from the drill and live footage. So maybe, for instance, you see a beautiful cloud in the background. They go to the next camera, boom, suddenly the cloud is gone. You go back, you start checking the shadows, you will see, well, in the shadows, it's way late in the afternoon, and now it's early in the morning, and it's said to have happened 10 minutes ago, 10 past 10 in the morning. So what's up with the late afternoon shadows? You see, this is how we can see what's going on. I also believe that they're using vehicles many times to control the area. The buses are used to drive crisis actors in and out, but they're also there to block people from seeing what's actually going on. And they can also block traffic around the location. It's just like you drive down the street in central Stockholm or whatever, you're behind a bus, the bus stops. Well, you stop behind it because you think, oh, there's a queue in front of it or something, maybe a red light or whatever. But actually, if you got a helicopter from above that just say, okay, and action, block, 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 you can control the whole area for whatever short period of time you need to get everything in position and get it going. So that's how these buses are used. And you will see them so many times. They're right there in the background. Big, big bus, major bus often there. You got other vehicles like white trucks. These trucks are very often what is called grip trucks, which is they're used on film sets. They're neutrally looking. Sometimes there's a logo on the side of the door. For instance, when the Manhattan van attack happened, there's this big white truck in the background that are there all the time inside the cordon off area, which it has nothing to do there, but it's part, since it's part of the operation. And this comes from a company called Hadad. I managed to zoom in on the logo and identified it. It's Hadad, one of the biggest suppliers of film equipment in the US. Right there, could be a good question, ask them what the hell were they doing there inside this operation. But these grip trucks, you can open them up, and they're equipped in different ways, anything from a complete makeup studio or the wardrobe or lighting or electrical equipment, pyrotechnics, explosives, you name it. They come in these neutrally looking white trucks. So the white trucks are really important to look out for as well. So the targets, you asked about the targets. Since they need to go emotional, that is the whole point of the thing, emotionally. So how do you hit somebody emotionally? And how do you hit a nation emotionally? It has to be something that is iconic for that country. It has to be a symbol for the nation. It has to be something that has a touristic value. Otherwise, you won't get that impact. So that's what they're aiming for. So it will be the Twin Towers. the Eiffel Tower, the Colosseum, the Acropolis, Big Ben, these type of things. But after a while, they start running out of them because there have been attacks against most of these places. So what are they done? They moved towards areas where this random violence can affect as many as possible. Once again, strategy of tension. Freak people out so that they will accept more and more control. So this is why I believe, I'm just guessing from the outside because I don't know their real intentions, but this is one of the reasons why they're aiming at train stations, airports, bus stations, things that has to do with communication. I think it's also to scare us or keep us in this freak out mode so we don't dare to move either. Because if we think, oh, we're going to be hit by a terrorist here, but if I go and take a plane, I can fly out. Well, the terrorists are over there as well. Well, I take a train. Well, the terrorists are over there as well. It will just paralyze you. So this is one of the reasons I believe that they're aiming at these sensors. Then you have there all of these vehicle attacks that have started since, I think, the Nice attack. Maybe that was one of the first ones. Then you got the Berlin attack, the truck attack, the Stockholm truck attack, multiple attacks with cars in London. You got Melbourne car attack. You got in Manhattan, there's multiple vehicle attacks as well. The reason for the vehicles is, if you haven't noticed, I mean, there was nobody driving into crowds 5 years ago. And suddenly now people are just running into crowds all over the place. So what's going on? Something, I believe, is taking place here. So we have a problem, the vehicles. The reaction, oh my God, something needs to be done. And what is the solution? In on stage comes driverless vehicles, autonomous vehicles. You will see there's this massive pump out of driverless vehicles, like campaigns being lined up right after the terror attacks in the same countries. So you will have like a truck attack, boom. And in just a week later, well, driverless buses or driverless trucks. Then you don't have to worry about this whole thing. Also, the bollards, these steel things that are coming out of the road, are, if you don't haven't noticed, they look quite a lot like a prison, I would say, but on a level down to the up to your hip or something, so you don't really notice it. But what if they got three times higher? Or so? They're trying to build like a prison around us, and this whole thing is smart with the autonomous vehicles, smart cars. What they're wanting to do is to push us into what they call smart cities. That is one of the main things they want. Get people out of the countryside, push us into the main cities. This is also why you will see all of these directed energy weapon started, ignited fires in California, Portugal, Greece, Sweden, and so on. That you can see it's very, very, with laser-like precision, people are being pushed out of these areas and into the cities, all according to Agenda 21. If you don't just read Agenda 21, it's all lined up there. So, but the next step is to push us into this the smart cities, and in the smart cities where everything will be digital, and be able to speak to each other, communicate to each other, and be controlled by the same forces. We are in a beautiful but absolute digital fascist prison that is under the spell of 5G, the wireless system 5G, which is a totally different ballgame than 2G, 3G, 4G. 5G is militarized. I mean, if we go into that area, it's like, I don't know, then it's game over almost. It's like very, very scary, this new technology. But it's presented to us as, well, it's the best thing that ever happened because now you can download a movie in 2 seconds. Well, the thing is, when you can transport that amount of information that fast, when you look at the forces behind this operation and how they use this type of information, whatever information against us, this is also how a digital prison is being created. And most of us are not aware of it. I'm not sure if I answered all your questions, but if please, if there was one I left out, please remind me.
Oh, no, no, you did a fine job of that. Some of these incidents you also had mentioned are designed more for the recording viewers rather than the actual eyewitnesses who are on location. Isn't that correct?
It's totally for the media. I think they don't care at all. The only thing they want on location is for people to back off and stay out of sight so they don't interfere. They are not interested in making an impact on the location. Their aim is mainstream media that they control, that they can pump this out so that we globally will say, oh my God, we're living in this mayhem of terrorism. We really need protection. We really need your solution. And then we will welcome it. And we will accept more and more. Also, this whole thing that I didn't mention was like a microchip population they want. There are all of these stepping stones getting closer and closer, making it so convenient. I just saw on Facebook, I think it was today or yesterday, this new ring with a built-in chip that you can start your car, your computer. It can lock up your door, anything. It's fantastic, this whole thing. But this is just the stepping stone thing, one step closer to you being chipped. And once you're chipped, that is when suddenly you lose control over yourself, because then they can control you. And once it's a one world currency, digital, that is a major, major threat towards our liberties as well. Because nowadays, if you have a credit card, it doesn't work. Well, you can just put up your wallet, give them some dollars, boom, 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 thank you, and off you go. But the day when the cash money is no longer there, whoever controls your chip, who will be somebody you can't approach, it will be some computer somewhere, if they think, well, Richard, you have overstepped your limit, or you have said things that is not very nice about us, so we will just say thank you and goodbye and shut you off. You will be out. It's very, very, very dangerous, I believe. And people like David Icke has been warning about it since the early 90s. But now we see it unfold in countries like Sweden, which I think is like a test run country, where it's got such a good reputation internationally. So if they can pull it off there, great, then they can implement it in other countries. So they use Sweden because the Swedish population is so lame. They're so afraid of conflicts. Yet they think that they're the most awake people any place, you know, because they're highly educated and so on. But also, unfortunately, it's a big sorrow. I say that because I grew up there, is that they so do not understand what's going on here. And so Sweden has become, I think, the first country that is now 98% digital when it comes to money. The banks doesn't even, you can't go to the bank with money. You can't withdraw money from the bank. They don't use cash anymore. You can't pay the bus with cash. You can't, if you go down the vegetable market on a Sunday, they have card readers. If somebody's begging in the street, they've got like a mobile, you can just swish it to them. There's no cash anymore. Monopoly, wow. The game for kids, you open it, they've got credit cards in it. There are no, you know, the old bills. No, it's gone. I go up there. I mean, I'm Danish, but I grew up there. And I come home, I feel like a stranger on a foreigner on a strange planet. It's like I'm totally outside, because I don't understand anything of it anymore. And I haven't got the apps and the discs and the book and the digital IDs and this and that. I'm out. So I'm coming there with cash, and they're saying, well, sorry, but no. They're trying to force that on. And now the banks, I think, is also very interesting. We're looking at a bank in Sweden, for instance. I've got a Swedish bank account. And like a while ago, I wanted to ask, please, can you tell me how I do this, how I move this from my account over to my bank, whatever. It was just a question. And they said, yeah, of course. But before that, we have some security questions for you. I said, okay. And I think I could accept anything that had to do with security regarding me as a person, if I am who I am, and some of that I would have no problem with. They asked, are you related to any politician that is in a critical position or is exposed to terror threats? I'm like, what? Have you? They're also questioned directly connected to the US. Are you an American citizen? Are you the... What I'm looking at is in a Swedish bank asking me questions just because I want to do something in my account is the NSA. And this is spreading out. So not very nice. Not very nice at all.
Yes, and I completely agree.
I'm sorry, Richard, I read on here, but...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was just saying I completely agree about the digital currency taking away more of our independence. But please, what were you going to say?
No, I was in these banks in Sweden now. Also, a friend of mine told me just a few days ago that now if you come and you want to put money in your account, I'm not talking about withdraw money. I'm saying I want to put money in my account. The bank will ask you, where did you get the money? Okay, so I would say, well, my mother gave it to me. Now it's a two-step thing. They will ask, okay, so your mother gave it to you. Where did she get the money from? And I'm just trying to put the money in my account. I'm not, it's like, it's getting bizarre.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, the one other thing I did mention, I was wondering if you'd like to discuss Sandy Hook, the Sandy Hook incident a bit, and how it seems to also be used. Getting used on the internet for social media censorship now, in spite of Wolfgang Halbig having won that court case recently, actually.
Well, Sandy Hook, in my humble opinion, absolute staged event. The whole thing from the beginning to the end, there's not a true word mentioned in the whole thing. I was part of creating a book called Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. It's you can find it on moonrockbooks.com. It's part of a whole series where I, together with Jim Fetzer and Mike Pelesic, there's a whole series of book about Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, the JFK assassination, 9/11, the Charlottesville attack, the Orlando Pulse shooting. The moon landing. Many of these are in a series of books. There's about 10 or 12 books now, I think. And these books are a combination of 8 to 10, up to 12 researchers, PhDs, I mean, high-level intellectuals and so on that has each written one chapter. So it's a combination. It's not just like Jim Fetzer's opinion, boom, there you go. It is a combination of all of these heavyweights in each and every of these books. And the book about Sandy Hook, which I designed the cover and the interior, was actually banned by Amazon, which is becoming more and more normal now. But that was the first book I've ever heard that was banned, just because it raises some extremely serious questions about Sandy Hook, because it's like 400 pages, just going step by step by step by step through the forensic evidence, through everything, and just pointing out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of things that doesn't match up, that are absolutely fake or false or manipulated and so on. So when Amazon banned it, Jim Fetzer and his partner, what they decided, and I loved it, was, okay, if you ban us, we will just give it out for free. So on my website, lightonconspiracies.com, lightonconspiracies, multiple or plural, .com, you go to the shop and you will be able to download a free ebook called Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. So you can make up your own mind. You can just, in your own time, sit and smoke a cigar or whatever you want and just go through the whole thing. And then afterwards, coming from theory to what is more based on facts, and then make up your own mind. So Sandy Hook, I mean, there are things in that one that is just, we got one of the children, for instance, Noah Posner, 6-year-old, beautiful little boy, that is said to have been killed there. Horrible, if true, absolute horrific. Then the exact same boy is killed again 2 years later in a mass shooting in Pakistan, Peshawar, Pakistan, a school shooting there. The exact same boy, the exact same photo, everything is used there. Why? Well, I have no idea why they did it like that. But it's not only one photo. It's in multiple places in Pakistan where they were holding memorials for the victims and so on, where the same photo was being presented over and over again. And also, Lenny Posner, the daddy of the alleged father of Noah Posner, he's been even approached by this whole thing. And he, instead of even looking into it, he's trying to sue the people that are bringing it up. And so we have this whole Sandy Hook thing that is now being used to try and shut us down and to used as a tool to shut down free speech and so on. There is a whole thing that I don't understand really what's going on around Alex Jones and InfoWars, where he is sort of, he's become the symbol for this thing. I don't like talking bad about things, but Alex Jones is a person I don't trust at all. And I think there's a whole lot different operation going on, using him in the forefront as an, I don't know, some kind of ambush for the rest of us to follow and being led in a certain direction. But whatever the case is, the Sandy Hook and how it's being used now is to try and shut us down and to try and sue us to be quiet.
And in spite of, like I say, Wolfgang winning in his court proceedings that he had most recently here, it's still that's just not being covered by the media, you know. Just assertions.
But Richard, Richard, yes? It's when you look at these type of high profile cases, and you look at mainstream media. Okay, let's take for instance the Martin Luther King case. Everybody knows about Martin Luther King. I would say high profile. I would say if a court case against his murder and a possible conspiracy behind it, if there was such a case, wouldn't you think that that would draw some attention from mainstream media? Well, actually, there was such a case in 1999. The family of King, Martin Luther King, his family were putting up a legal fight to show that there was a conspiracy behind it. There was especially one, Lord Jowers, a person, and the whole court case, the whole thing was ruled out that there was a conspiracy behind it, that James Earl Ray was totally innocent. There was a conspiracy involving FBI and different stately organs and so on, J. Edgar Hoover and so on. So this was a court case, boom, with a verdict. So did you ever read about it? I think not. How many journalists from mainstream media was there when this happened? There was one during the whole court case, one from a local newspaper. That was it. What does that tell you? Something is very wrong in mainstream media. Otherwise, there would have been thousands, just like at the O.J. Simpson case or anything. You know, did Monica Lewinsky give Clinton a blowjob or not? They're standing outside, they're sleeping outdoors in sleeping bags and so on to cover this case. And here, when there was something that was of real importance, nothing, absolutely nothing. So every time I would say when something like, for instance, this Clinton-Lewinsky case happened, you also have to see when all the media's attention is pulled in one direction, what is going on in all over the place behind it, because that is a classic diversion. Look over here, and in the same time in the background lots of things are happening that we are not aware of, but that's where our attention should be. So everything, every time something says boom in one place, I look the other way and just see, okay, let me just check. And that's often where you find the real events.
Sometimes, of course, multiple purposes can be served, right? It can be used as that distraction from other things going on in the world, and then at the same time used to serve a problem reaction solution sort of agenda with further totalitarian draconian conditions around us. I had one question. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, absolutely. You're absolutely right. And it's also like I and many other, we're on the outside guessing, trying to understand what's going on, because I'm sure that there's so many things going on that we have absolutely no idea about. Because just like you say, very often these are multi-layered operations, you know, with multiple things going on at the same time, designed to confuse us or designed to make us look in that direction, which maybe I fall for these traps, you know, I've been totally focused in the wrong direction. Multiple things going on here, or they play with us, they pull off some crappy operation in Florida or whatever, so we look that way, while maybe the important thing is going on in the Ukraine. You know, I'm just a one-man band with a small little wonderful team around me doing my utmost, but I'm sort of on the street level trying to identify assassins and these hit teams and what they're up to. But what's actually going on, it is it's beyond me. But what I do feel it is that it's a spiritual battle as well between good and evil. That is where the real fight is, and we're sort of like focused on the game board and how these pieces, the chess pieces, are being played around. But the real focus is in ourselves, in the heart, between good and evil, and what we feed, what we choose in our daily life as well, and also how we awake out of this spell and take the power back so that we can become these wonderful, wonderful, balanced, open-minded individuals that can make a difference in the world.
Absolutely. We try to have a spiritual journey, evolution in this lifetime. And our experiences and perceptions, understanding, can contribute to that. I think a lot of people are confused because they can't make out why all of these horrific events are happening around them. And it just internalizes and comes out in the way they can lash out at people in their day-to-day lives. The way you teach people how to, you know, have these set of tools to detect all of this, and they can all become the same sort of investigators like yourself. If we could all do that, it would make such a difference. So I was curious to hear, I mean, you've connected in your books a lot of these assassinations. So not so much how it was played out, but regarding the John Lennon situation, as far as, you know, the influence on the society, the people that he had, I have to ask your take on, you know, the motives behind why he was singled out.
It's a very good question and very difficult to answer, because who was John Lennon? That, I mean, this is maybe the first question, because when you look into the Beatles, the more you look into them, unfortunately, a very, very different story than the official story appears, and a very sad story as well, because I used to really love the Beatles and so on. But it appears that the Beatles was a creation by the Tavistock Institute there to control and divert the attention first and foremost away from the Kennedy assassination. I mean, they appeared just a few months after the Kennedy assassination, but also to lead the younger generation away from trying to stop the different wars and into sex, drugs, and rock and roll, the whole hippie movement, which was very much coordinated and controlled through one of them, the Tavistock Institute, but also centers like the Laura Camden, just outside Los Angeles, and so on. And where in this whole thing, the Beatles were very key in it. So who was John Lennon? And that is a major question. I don't know for sure. I think a lot of what some of the songs he did were absolutely amazing and so on. But he was also a major pain in the butt to people like J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI. He was, because this is the thing, when someone becomes that popular, they become a threat. Because if they say, let's go left, millions and millions of people will follow them. Same with Lady Diana, loved by a whole world. She starts talking against landmines, boom, major threat, take her. And so this popularity is one of the reasons why we see beautiful individuals being taken out. So what had happened was that he was, I need to reverse as well, back to the JFK assassination, because about a year or so in 1962, the CIA came up with the idea of creating like an ultra secret hit team it went under the name of Operation 40 or Group 40. The task was given by Eisenhower to Vice President Richard Nixon, who contacted people in the CIA like David Attlee Phillips, Ted Shackley, and E. Howard Hunt, gave them the task to gather very brutal, disciplined killers and people good to psyops and black ops and blackmail, torture, you name it. And most of the people they recruited, they went to Miami and the JM Wave station there and started recruiting mostly exiled Cubans for this very task. Of this Operation 40, there was about 20 that were being trained as assassins. They were being trained to kill with anything from poison to explosives to guns to knives, you name it, assassins. And they were trained in Lake Pontchartrain in Louisiana. They were in Florida and the Everglades. They were also down in Guatemala and so on, being trained in everything, all different kinds of jungle warfare to whatever. And to start with, the target was Fidel Castro. But then, after the Cuban Missile Crisis, suddenly JFK had this, major revelation or moment of enlightenment when he saw the level of madness he was involved in that could have started a Third World War. And on that point, he decided he wanted out, he wanted to save this world. And that's when he suddenly became, from sort of like a flamboyant playboy type, to this very determined individual that was just going to stop this whole thing. That's when he started saying, I'm going to destroy the CIA into 1,000 pieces. I'm going to withdraw out of Vietnam. I'm going to get the Federal Reserve Bank off our back. I'm going to nuclear weapons out of Israel. I'm going to hunt down the mob and so on, creating mass amount of enemies around him. And that is why I believe he was taken out, and a major part of the shooters in Dealey Plaza, because it was an ambush where he was not allowed to get out alive. So there were multiple shooters. There was not just 2, 3, 5, 6, 8. There were multiple shooters. I've identified, I think, most of them, but there are still people I don't know and locations as well. So there were just shooters all over the place. And many of them were people from Operation 40. Now, after they took JFK out, they became sort of like rock stars in the arena of assassins, and they sort of became lifted to a whole new level. And especially George Bush Jr., that were at that point, he was a young man, a CIA operative, and also the actual paymaster of this hit team. He was the guy that funded this hit team, Operation 40, believe it or not. And he was in the Deltex building when the shots were fired. He then brought this group with him. His whole career, key people in Operation 40 was following him, like Felix Rodriguez, David Morales, several of these other people, and then sent into different areas. He used them to take out Che Guevara. He they were sent down to be part of many of the military coups in South America, where they took out Salvador Allende and other people. They killed Pablo Neruda. They were also people part of Operation 40, were part of the assassination of Olof Palme in Sweden 23 years later. They took out Robert Smith in South America. Many, many, many different people. They were also very central in creating the death squads in South America. They were very central in creating what was called Operation Condor, which were tracking down and terminating, totally destroying people that left from the left, Salvador Allende hanger. They were also the people behind the blowing up of Washington Embassy, row in Washington, Orlando Letier. They blew up a bomb there, killing him and a woman called Ronnie Moffitt. But they were also part of Operation Phoenix in the Vietnam War. I mean, these key people in so much mass murder and death and destruction around the globe that it's just incredible. But back to John Lennon. So John Lennon had kept a very low profile for quite a few years, taking care of his kids. He was married to Yoko Ono. They were living in the Dakota Building, and he was just in the process of finishing a new record he had planned to do a peace tour. I think that would have gone in quite a few countries. And he had this record almost done together with Yoko Ono. And so this day they came back to the Dakota Building. They came in a limo, and Yoko Ono went out first. John followed her. The alleged assassin, David Chapman, was standing to the right. Yoko Ono started walking in towards the entrance, and John followed like 5-6 yards behind her. When she turned the corner, he was way beyond where David Chapman was standing, where suddenly I think 5 or 6 shots were fired straight from the left, killing him. He started crawling towards the entrance, but Yoko Ono came out screaming. They got an ambulance, took him to the hospital, but he was declared dead on arrival. So the question is, David Chapman, the alleged shooter, was standing near the limo to the right behind him. The shots were fired straight from the left and very, very almost point blank. Some of the shots were fired so closely that it looked like it was the same entrance wound. So who was standing there, I would say, would be a good question. Well, this day, there was this nice looking old gentleman who used to work for the CIA, and this very day had jumped in extra. Working as this door opener, portier type of guy. But for 10 years, he was one of the highest ranking officers in Operation 40. His name was Jose Perdomo. So I ask you, what are the chances that this individual was just working extra this night in the exact position where the shots were fired, and just happened to be one of the top assassins under the direct control of George Bush Sr.? I cannot see that as a coincidence. And he just disappeared very quickly. You heard him, one of the first witnesses on stage, on location. I've got an interview. You can hear her scream, Lennon. Well, John was talking to the doorman. He was arguing with the doorman. And the doorman was Jose Perdomo. But what Jose Perdomo did was he went straight over to David Chapman, put the gun in his hand, or he said that he took the gun away from Chapman. I believe he put the gun there, got his fingerprints. And what he did was then he gave the trigger words, "You just shot Lennon." And from then on, Chapman turned into like a zombie and was just standing there waiting to be picked up. And since then, he's just... when you listen to his story, it's like listening to a tape recorder being in a looped just circle around and round and round, saying the exact same thing, believing that he actually did it, but he did not. So Chapman, not the shooter, Jose Perdomo, I believe the shooter, but there was also a second shooter, I believe, because most of the time they have backup shooters if something should go down. And this was a so-called handyman. He's been referred to as a handyman. I believe his name is Clyde Forshaw, still alive in Canada, that he was the backup shooter and taking part of this assassination.
And a lot of, well, when I was speaking to one friend about the incident, the singling out of him to be assassinated, they questioned the time period. He was at his peak, they suggested, a bit earlier in his career, perhaps, and was had the most followers and influence a bit earlier. I don't know. Would you disagree with that person's thought on that?
Here we come into an area that I normally try to avoid because it's very controversial. It seems to me, and this I base on a lot of research and many other very like veterans in research and so on, that Paul McCartney actually, the real Paul McCartney, actually died in 1966 in September, November the 9th, 1966, in a car accident. He was then replaced by a double. The reason for that is very, I'm still not totally sure, but I know the MI5 was involved. I know there was a lot of different agencies around this whole thing. There was a lot of efforts putting into making the double. He's referred to as Fall in many interviews and so on, as identical as possible. But you can see when you do forensic evidence and there's pathologists that has been looking into the teeth and the skeleton and the length and you name it, especially an Italian couple, you will find out, at least I believe so, I know many people do not, that this is not the same individual. So there was this replacement of this. And in ever since that, in so many of the albums, the lyrics, the album covers, there are all of these different clues pointing towards the fake Paul, and so on. And you can even hear George Harrison, he refers to him directly as Fall, not Paul, Fall, several times. And they speak, I've got recorded interviews when they're just sitting talking around, when they're talking about Fall as the last one that came to the band instead of being one of the founders. And George Martin, their producer, he's got like a seal. He became knighted and he got a seal. And on it, there are three Beatles, not four. So also there's another book as part of the Moonrock books called, it's about Paul McCartney as well by Nick Collerstrom. Anyway, so if that is true, that Paul was replaced, this is a major secret, because also it is a major, major income. At that time, it was, I think, one of the major incomes for the UK and, I mean, for the country as a total, the Beatles was the income. So we're talking massive amount of money as well. And then the longer you keep a thing like that covered up, the worse it gets with all of these lies, with all of these things. And so they start packing in other lies also and affecting in different areas and using these people as well. And so it was not only Paul that died, also Brian Epstein, manager, he died as well. Then you have George Harrison was almost stabbed to death before he died of cancer, which cancer is something that can very easily be accomplished by agencies like the CIA. They've got all types of cancer enhancing things that can kill you very quickly. So I don't know for sure, but I know that that George was almost stabbed to death not long before, or it was after, but very close as well. So you've got these two possible deaths, then you got Brian Epstein, then you got George, then you got John. And some sources say that John was just in the process of saying, I've had enough of all of this secrecy. I'm going to go open with this. And that he was just planning to step forward to get a conference, a press conference, and just get it off his back and say, this is it. We've lied to you. And this whole thing is just a made up fantasy. And that is when he was taken out.
I suppose these people, when they've become to a level of such influence and are aware of a lot of the control structure, you know, are not willing to play along, you know, they've outlived their usefulness, or, you know, are just clearly simply too much of an opposition, you know, they have too much influence as a populist following. No one in power wants a chain reaction of more to do the same, you know, and create a domino effect against the elite, of course. So, I mean, John F. Kennedy was clearly aware of a lot of the control system. He was very opposed to Israel having nuclear weapons. John Lennon with the Beatles was quoted on the air a lot of times discussing the power system in the entertainment industry, for that matter. He was even quoted saying, go ahead.
No, it's anyone who has a knowledge from the inside, who has been an asset, you know, and who has been following orders and played along, made millions, become a star, whatever. And then after some years, maybe 10, 20 years down the line, they're fed up. It's eating them from the inside. And they decide, I've had enough. I'm out. And then they suddenly know too much. So one of the best way to get suicided is to have a major secret with you and then say, I'm going to have a press conference tomorrow. That normally leads to a very quick death just before the press conference. It's been repeated so, so many times. So there is a possibility there that that was the reason at that exact moment that he was taken out. The other reason, if that was not it, then I would say this planned world tour, peace world tour, that also could mess up with different planned wars and effects, because he was a peace icon, and these are the things they absolutely hate.
Absolutely. Well, it looks like we've just about run out of time. Look forward to this future show on this engineering of this Bilderberg meeting.
Yeah,
incident. Richard, that would be great.
Let's do a show, and then I'll just tell the story, because it will show a lot of the details that could help to expose future events as well. So I would be very happy to do that.
Excellent, and I loved what I heard you mention before, that we're only 1% stuck. You know, all of us, if we could actually raise our consciousness about all these things and our awareness, our perception.
I think what you mean is, I did a workshop once. It was about relationships, but it was actually in martial arts. It was this couple, Aikido couple, and one of the exercises was I was being held up against the wall by this big guy, and he was holding me by the wrists, just up. He was really strong, and so the leader, he asked me, so are you stuck? And I said, I tried to get free. I said there was no way I could do it. And he said, so how stuck are you? And I said, totally stuck, because I can't get loose. And he said, actually, if you look at it, you're not, because just a few percentage of your body is actually up against the wall being held there. So he said, if you free your mind and just think that you're totally free, then and get it into yourself that you are free, then just dance your way out of it. And so I did. And once we liberated our minds into thinking that we were free, the other one couldn't hold us. It was like very strange. It was a real eye-opener, because so much is in the mind. And that is also why the dark forces are so focused on controlling our mind. Because if they can limit us there, they can control us. But if we start to do the longest travel ever from the brain to the heart, the more we come down into the heart and make decisions with the heart, so that we come from compassion, that we choose love instead of fear, that we choose love instead of hate, that we choose freedom and not oppression, the more difficult it is for them to control us. Our heart is so much stronger. So I say, let's use the heart. Get out of the head. You know, the mind is there, so confusing, can think thousands of thoughts per day. It's just a machine to think thoughts. But we think, oh, this is me. But actually, we're much more than the mind. So we need to control the mind, learn how to control it through meditation and other techniques so that it's not controlling us. Because the mind is capable of everything. In Raja Yoga, which is the science of the mind, they say the mind is like a wild monkey stung on bees, high on cocaine, and something like that. I mean, it can go anywhere. And it's if you're not able to pull the reins and just say, "Ooh, cool down. You're here to serve me, not to control me." So I think that is also why they're so focused on mind control, not heart control, because they can't get to us in the heart. And we know in our heart what is right and wrong. We don't need 1,000 different laws to say what is right and wrong. We know it. We know it. That we don't listen to it all the time, that's a different one. But you know what is right and what is wrong. And I say, let's follow that. It's the same forces behind these crap operations, these global tour of terror and 9/11. It all goes back into the same octopus, the same head of the octopus. So whatever almost you look into, if it's vaccines or chemtrails or alleged global warming or assassinations or banking or whatever, you will find the longer you dig, it will get you straight back to the same point. Same forces, same individuals, and so on. So, and the good news is there are very few. They're in the thousands. We're billions. So not a problem. We just had to keep the focus and transcend this minor bump in the road called the New World Order.
Excellent. Well, thank you once again for coming on. We look forward to having you back, and have an excellent day. And once again, your website, Light on Conspiracies, plural, lightonconspiracies.com.
It is. And like I said, I'm a one-man band. I'm not paid by anyone. So any support in me, my efforts to stop this whole thing is greatly appreciated. I've got a membership area, my monthly newsletter, where I show my predictions and all the things that are going on. There's a lot of photos, images, so you can see for yourself all the different signs, and also all the ones I predicted, and then you can see the following months when they actually happen. And I'm on Patreon, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. My Facebook is like almost like an underground headquarters when it comes to the drills, because the drill is always part of these operations. And people are sending me from all over the world, from the Falkland Islands to almost to Greenland, to Newfoundland, to France, to everywhere, sending me, oops, there's a drill coming up here, there's a drill. And so by putting it out there, and then with the hope of possibly stopping it. I mean, just recently on the 11th of August, there was a drill in Manchester, London, Manchester, UK. And I went out on Facebook and said, please be aware, this drill is coming up. It's exactly in the same location, it's the same area as where the alleged Manchester Arena attack happened. So please be aware. Then the very next day on August 12, boom, the thing that I warned about took place. This is just one of so many, but one of the ways we can help to stop these things, I sometimes suggest, is that when there is a drill in your neighborhood, wherever, in your hometown, wherever, if you see it, go there, be there the day before and during the drill, and make sure that you're there while they set the whole thing up. And then when you see them set the whole thing up, it will look a lot like a film stage, you know, with the same type of vehicles, the same type of security, the whole layout will look like a film set, like for a commercial of Coca-Cola or whatever. Here, the product is fear. So what you can do is bring friends, family, whatever, with cameras and start filming them. Make it very obvious to them that they are being filmed, that they are being observed. Meaning, if they got any bad intention, this will freak them out because they can only work in the dark. If we say, we see you, we know what you're up to, so stop it, and go back, get a life, leave us alone. That is the idea. The danger is that they don't want to be exposed. So if they see people filming them, they might approach you. Remember, just because somebody has a uniform on doesn't mean that he's a real police. It means that it's somebody with a police uniform. If he's a SWAT, whatever, doesn't mean that he's the real thing. But there are great little tools or things like an app called Bamboozle. I'm sure that there are other apps as well, where with one press on a button, you can go live streaming on YouTube. So you can use that if you're approached by somebody aggressive. Just say, please, before you even intend to hurt me or think about it, be aware you are being filmed and it's live on YouTube. That sometimes, hopefully most of the time, has a very chilling effect on these individuals and they will back down. But don't go alone. Bring friends and so on, so you have witnesses and support and also that you can back up. But should something, let's say that you filmed it and then something actually happened, this type of footage is invaluable because it is extreme proof of what I'm talking about. Also, you can compare the crime scene before and after, all the different details, what actually happened, where the explosives were hidden, and so on and so on. So that is one way to help as well.
Well, thank you so much once again, Ole. And to you and all the listeners, we will speak again soon.
Thank you so much, Richard. My absolute pleasure.
Well, that concludes the Rebroadcast Archive, originally aired live September 3, 2018, on another platform which had previously hosted the Arcane Semantics broadcast. Thank you to all the listeners, and we will speak again soon. Until then, transcend the construct. Regards.